Welcome back to the Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI. We've been talking about the situation in the Middle East for, just over 110 days now by my count. And that whole time, I've actually thought to myself, great, I'm a radio host yelling at the sky, yelling into the ether. I know people are listening. I know people are getting an education. But what am I actually doing to try and solve the problems? What am I actually doing to bring peace? I can yell and scream all I want, but is that actually solving anything? Lucky for me, my friends from Stand With Us Northwest, from the American Jewish Committee, brought a whole delegation here from around the Middle East so that we could actually talk not just solutions, but the future and what we have in common as opposed to what our differences are. And they're all here right now in my studio. Right now in my studio, I have Dan Pfefferman from Israel. He's the executive director. He's the author, speaker, researcher, and personality. Personality, he's got a lot of personality. We have a lot in common already. We have Dr. Ahmed Kuzai. He's from Bahrain. He's a director of political affairs, a political consultant, and an author. We have Fatima Al-Harbi. She's from Bahrain also. She's the Gulf Affairs director, author, and a peace activist. Youssef El-Zari. He's from Morocco. He's a Morocco director, marketing specialist, and civil society activist. And we have Naveen Elias, who's also from Israel. She's an advocacy fellow with the Philos Project. And I have all these people here in my studio, and I just think to myself, I am so, so blessed. So we're discussing what could be the question I could ask first. And of course, this one is the one that's most important on everybody's minds. And this goes to my friends from Bahrain. Can you get us tickets for Formula One?
Oh.
You have good hummus.
We can make that happen. I have a guy who has the best hummus recipe I've ever had. In fact, he actually sometimes spikes it, which I tell him not to do for me, with certain, shall we just say, Seattle products. And I'm like, that's not hummus if you start doing that. But yes, we can make a trade if you want to make
your salt. Which team do you cheer for?
Well, young Zach, who's sitting right behind you out there, he is very into the Formula One racing. This was his question. He submitted this one. So if you ask me that, I have no idea what to actually
would
answer.
Would love
that
to
one.
Have him and you in Bahrain, of course, and the Formula One, the opening of the season in Bahrain.
Oh, soon. Amazing. That's what he was very excited. He was thrilled to ask
about
that.
We got tickets and you have a place to stay.
Yes.
That's awesome. So he's very big on McLaren. He says he's very hot on McLaren. Okay. I don't know where there he is. There's a young Zach right there. So, okay. See, this is how we solve the world. What do we have in common? This is how we solve world peace, by talking about this kind of stuff. I truly believe it.
Food, right?
Food. That's the way it goes. We discuss food. I mean, you know, did we steal hummus? Did we steal falafel? Did somebody else steal falafel? We were having that discussion right before all this. But getting into the other stuff, I mean, the similarities between our countries, the similarities between our cultures, there's tons of them. Let's talk about Bahrain for a minute. Never been to Bahrain. What's your favorite thing about Bahrain?
The people. The people and the small island. It's very small. You can go all over the country and meet locals all over. It's beautiful.
It sounds amazing, especially when we live in a place like this. You guys were actually comparing it to home. So, you, sir, what's your favorite thing about it?
Well, I'm going to share the people with her. I mean, Bahrain is so diverse that we host the only indigenous Jewish community in the Gulf. So we have Hindus, we have Muslims, we have Christians. We have the biggest Christian church in the Middle East today.
Mm-hmm.
The diversity of food, the people that come and go the whole time. I mean, the capital city is called Manama. It translates to the place to sleep. It was a harbor back in the day, and it still is.
That's amazing. So it sounds like a place I'd love to visit. And it's a good thing my wife's not here right now. She'd be booking tickets right now and bankrupting me, buying all this stuff, because it's not cheap to fly all over to the Middle East.
We're already.
Yeah, we're going to Israel, actually, in a few weeks to see our son. He's in school there right now at Herzliya. So let's talk about Morocco. What's your favorite things about Morocco?
I would say the people as well, but also the culture, how versatile it is. Morocco is the first, has like the biggest Jewish community in the Arab world, and we are very versatile. We have a very big religious integrity in terms of the minorities we have, and we live in peace since forever. And this is for me like the most beautiful thing about Morocco, which is its peaceful mind, actually.
Amazing. So, Dr. Kuzai, if looking at Bahrain for a minute, and we're discussing Bahrain, let's take the Abraham Accords for a second. So that seemed like a no-brainer to me. It's not like Bahrain and Israel had a lot of problems or anything going on. When that news broke that something like that was going to happen in your country, to us here in America, us Jews who think we know everything about the Middle East, we're like, Bahrain? I don't know why, but sure, let's have peace with somebody in the Middle East. Was it a surprise to your country, or did it feel natural in your country?
It felt natural with the way our leadership have been taking steps over the past few years, it became natural. As he said, the Gulf states never engaged in a direct war with Israel, although Israel has been in the Middle East for 75 years, but was it really there? Mm-hmm. It was in complete isolation. How can you have peace or war with people you don't know? That's what we do at Sharaka. We are engaged in people-to-people peace. We want this warmth to be there. Of course, Jordan and Egypt had peace treaties with Israel, but those two states were engaged in direct wars before. So that's the difference. As he said, it became natural. It feels natural to be in touch with people, yet we still don't know each other. Let's consider this as the dating phase, where everybody will show their best.
Oh, I love that. That's a great, great comparison. Fatima, in your country, in Bahrain, when people are there, when now you have this, now we have this peace, peace is broken out between Israel and Bahrain. Is there any difference? Does it feel more like, oh, this is something that was just natural? Does it feel strained at all? Does it feel like something you have to work for?
Although on social media you see a lot of backlash, a lot of hate, but in real life I heard a lot of experiences of people, Israeli Jewish, coming to Bahrain, and they told me they didn't see even a single hate speech towards them. And it seems very natural. Like, I see something on social media, but in real life it's totally different. And Israelis and Jews told me they felt welcomed and loved in Bahrain.
So that sounds better than Seattle, Washington these days, for example, like when you have people blocking highways and stuff. Youssef in Morocco, do you get the same kind of feeling there? Is it the same questions I ask them? Is it the same kind of thing where there's a different war going on social media that's not real life? I say all the time, Twitter isn't real life. Is that how you view it as well?
I mean, the public opinion right now is very divided between like the people that are pro Abraham Accords and they love to open up to Israel and what they are doing and how it really benefits us from a lot of things. And some people, they just want to stick to what they say in the social media and they are like very anti-Israel, anti-Abraham Accords. What's funny is that everyone expected Morocco to sign the first Abraham Accord since we have this beautiful history with Israel. And as a matter of fact, in Tel Aviv, we have our offices that are in the 80s. So the idea here is that we were waiting for Israel to be that strong, and we were a little bit afraid that to stand up alone in all our people, the Arab countries, that they will backlash us anyway. So Abraham Accords just give us the opportunity to open up to our sister country. Don't forget that more than 1 million Israelis, they have Moroccan roots. So this is how we perceive Israel as a great opportunity for us to thrive in our own region.
Well, now you guys got the easy questions. So now, Naveen, let me ask you a question. This is one coming from my perspective. I know how I have felt towards people of, shall we just say, a different religion since October 7th. This has been very, very hard for me, especially with my son in the region, especially with my family serving and all that kind of stuff. In Israel, are people able to differentiate between what's going on in Gaza and what's going on with our partners in the Abraham Accords? Or is that something that's starting to overlap and get confused as well?
So before October 7, it was the Abraham Accord being like that dream that done for all the Arabs and also for the Christian in Israel. And everyone wait for this because a lot of Arabs in Israel have another families in behind every border. I can share with you, I have behind every border family there, and I cannot wait to have this Abraham Accord with all the countries in the Middle East. It's very difficult after October 7. It's being like something will happen and they will miss the peace with other countries. But I still feel that it will happen. This Abraham Accord with Emirates and Morocco should be a model for all the countries in the Middle East. And I am hope that soon we will can be everywhere in the Middle East and everyone in the Middle East can come and visit us.
Amazing. So, Dan, now you're going to get the hardest question, which one that you may not have any control over whatsoever. But I'm asking you this because I'm asking if this is the sentiment. Everybody's asking, what's next? So let's say in a perfect world, Hamas is completely defeated. Hamas is completely eradicated. Only the peaceful Palestinians are allowed to go back to Gaza, and they're there, and everything's fantastic, and they want to have peace with Israel, and we want to make that happen. But at the same time, the international community is going to go bonkers if it's Israel doing the rebuilding. Do we turn to our partners in the Abraham Accords to try and rebuild Gaza? What's the path forward? What's next after all this?
Well, I think before you talk about the path forward, you have to take a step back here and look at the kind of the Abraham Accords and the connection of this Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And what you've had, you had this region-wide effort to overcomplicate what is essentially a conflict between two peoples over a piece of land and who gets to live there and who gets to control it. And because of the anti-normalization laws, because of the vilification and demonization, which has now spilled not just from the Middle East, but all over the West, people have put this conflict on a pedestal. They've turned it into this Gordian knot, right? That it's really not that complicated. You have two sides. They each have demands. Neither is going to get everything they want. They have to meet in the middle and move on. And so far, you've had, in the past at least, one side willing to do that, and another side, and of course, I'm a biased Israeli, so I'm giving a biased Israeli point of view, another side that has not been willing to do that. But what you need is a regional and international approach pushing both sides to come to that middle meeting point and say, this is the best you're going to get. We all need to move on. The Abraham Accords, I feel, was a step in that direction by more countries in the region saying this conflict has held all of us back for too long. And you have, on top of that, different regimes and radical groups using it as an excuse just to inflame public sentiment in a very cynical way. And Ahmed is here, and he's much more of an expert on regional, you know, radical Islamist extremism. He's physically much closer to Iran, who's sitting at the heart of all this. And they do this incredibly cynically in order to make sure that they have a stranglehold on public opinion and kind of like, you know, the arsonist and the firefighter. They choose when to turn it on and then, oh, we're going to turn it off now. And they play with public opinion cynically. I personally don't think any of these radical regimes care even a little bit about the actual Palestinian cause, because if they did, they would have pushed for a reasonable settlement of this conflict a long time ago. And look at the state of Israeli Arabs today. Israeli Arabs today, 20% of the country. Yes, we had a conflict 75 years ago. And in that conflict, you had the creation, you know, some people were displaced. By the way, there were Jews all over the Middle East, including my family, who were displaced. My family came from Iraq, the long history and legacy of Iraqi Jews. And I'm going to say this very kind of bluntly, we got over it. Okay? And that's what the story of well over half of Israeli Jews from the Middle East, and many more Jews who came from Europe who were also displaced. And that's just the human story. And you move on and you build a life together. And today, I'm very happy to see Israeli Arabs, 20% of the country, being more and more proud to be a part of the country and kind of figuring out how to be Arab and Muslim or Christian or Druze and be Israeli at the same time. And there's problems and challenges, and it's moving forward. So if we look at that model, you have a vision of what coexistence in the region can look like. The question is are people, do people want to look forward or always look backward? You can't do both. The Abraham Accords was, I think, a step for the countries in the region to demystify this conflict and say, guys, we're not going to be held back by this. Let's have relations with Israel. Let's have relations with the Palestinians. Let's uncomplicate the situation a little bit. The more people, I think, come and get to know the actual conflict, and it's a conflict, and it's there, and it's complicated. And you can ask my friends this, what their experiences were coming to Israel for the first time, and now that they've been in this for a couple of years, learning about the actual history, you realize that it's very different than what you're taught. And if you're taught that your enemy is, you know, a 100-foot giant, that's really hard to tackle. But if it's a 10-foot giant, you know, that's something that's a lot easier. What I hope to see is a regional approach now, coming to back to your question, is a regional approach now that makes it very clear that radicals like Hamas will not dictate the realities on the ground. And you need all of the moderates coming together. And this is Israel, and this is the UAE, and this is Bahrain, this is Morocco, this is the Saudis, and this is the international community, all coming together and saying, we're not going to let Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis and Iran dictate the trajectories of the reality on the ground. The rest of the region wants to get along. The rest of the region wants to move forward. So how do you bring this new dynamic in place to bring everyone together? And once you do that and everyone is agreed on some kind of a reasonable future for the region, you can build the reconstruction. It shouldn't be Israel. It won't be Israel. And alongside that reconstruction, you need a de-radicalization effort, a societal-wide de-radicalization effort that teaches towards peace and towards living alongside one another.
We're talking with an international group of representatives who are here for the Sharaka event, which is building peace between Israelis and Arabs in a time of war. They're on a tour of the Pacific Northwest. Just like I said earlier, that Twitter isn't real life. I'm not sure the UN is real life either. I look what's happening at the UN, and I look what various countries are doing, and I don't see that as a pathway to peace. I see the countries working it out themselves as a pathway to peace. Dr. Kuzai, this is kind of a loaded question, but should we just forget what the UN says? And should we just say, hey, I'm sitting here with you right now, and we can have a discussion. Let's say you make all the decisions for Bahrain, of course, together with Fatima. Let's say the two of you are making those decisions together. Does the UN have a role to play, or is it better the countries just work it out themselves because the UN is a bureaucracy like anything else?
Well, as you said, it's a loaded question, but let me put it that way. The beautiful thing about international relations and the international community is that there are multiple ways of achieving what you want to achieve. Of course, most of what the UN decisions come out with are just words. So if you don't comply by them, yeah, you might have some grudges here and there with some countries, but in general, it's not a big deal. Let's look at the Oslo Accords, for example. It did not happen because of the UN. It happened because some people had a vision and they did it away from the UN. Did it work? For a period of time, yes. And until today, that's a reference of hope that we all go back to. So with the international community, again, I'll say it again. We can make our own way and it will work. It doesn't have to be under the umbrella of the UN.
Gotcha. Now, is that something, Youssef, that you would agree with that kind of sentiment? Do you see it a little differently?
I'm not really a political consultant, like to discredit or credit the UN and its effect on how it manages the regions. But I liked what you said about Twitter. And this is, for me, the thing I can talk about the most. I feel that social media right now are really polarizing the public opinion, not only in Morocco, but all over the world. And when I first went to Israel and when I came back, I went as an entrepreneur. I came back as a Mossad agent. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I just went there like just as a tourist. And I felt it. I felt how the propaganda is real, not only from the news outlets, but even from the people. They just keep resharing it and resharing it every time. And I was scared, to be honest. This is something very strong we need to put. And also something very funny, which is the trend right now. I grew up as Batman, the protagonist. That now Joker is the protagonist. He has his own movie. I grew up as Karate Kid. Right now you have Cobra Kai. The propaganda is real. And this is the kind of content we need to counterpart, not just to provide more empathetic or peaceful, but also to bring people to the table. And I'm thankful for what you just did.
You have to be on my show way more often. If we're talking about Batman and Joker and Cobra Kai, you have found that. See, this is how peace is done. You talk about bad TV shows and bad movies. I'm sure we could go back and forth on the latest Batman movie, which I had a lot of issues with. But I think you're a little younger than me, and you may have enjoyed very, very much.
I would be very honored to be here.
There we go. But we're still talking about Batman.
It was
right?
So forgettable.
Don't get me started on that mess, that whole thing. I mean, I like the Penguin. I thought he was good. I like the new Batmobile. I don't like what they did to the Wayne family, right? And see, my wife, who's listening to this right now, is just hearing blah, 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 right? Like the people in the Peanuts cartoons, right? The old Snoopy cartoons. So, Naveen, it seems like the pathway is there. It seems like there's a pathway here where everybody wants to just move forward and everybody says, hey, the Abraham Accords are working or peace is working. What's standing in the way? Because if we all acknowledge here that Twitter's not real life and the UN, it's just words, and we're going, and you may disagree, but what's standing in the way of that?
Again, your question.
Yeah, what's standing in the way of us moving forward? of us getting more peace partners.
אנחנו רוצים להתקדם. אם כולם סך הכל מסכימים שרוצים להתקדם ושלום זה טוב, אז למה מעצר אותם?
I think that social media it's very important. I didn't think that Israel can make it good. We should make it like better and share with everyone. I think it's also from our side like a minority, small minority. We are like 2% Christian live in Israel. We should share also. I think that our voice should be very strong for all the world, for all the Christians, especially that live in Lebanon and in other Arab country, and to share that, and it will be more strong, and to bring more people, more conversation with people, to hear, to listen for, like to give them to listen and to hear for us how we live in Israel.
Fatima, before we wrap this up, and I wish I could spend 45 minutes talking to you guys. I wish I could spend an hour talking. I wish we could do Shabbos this week. I wish we could do Sabbath at my house and have everybody over. Are they in town for Sabbath? Yes? No? Maybe? All right. We're going to see if we can work that out. But the thing I think about is we're all talking about a possible path forward. We're talking about what's standing in the way. We're talking about if anything's not standing in the way. When you see the video clips of what's going on online, of people marching in the streets, do you say the way I do when I see the Jews blocking highways that I don't even think they're necessarily Jewish, a lot of them? Mm-hmm. Do you look at this craziness and go, I don't know who these people are because they don't stand for me? I remember I was talking to a bunch of them at University of Washington, and I went up to them and I said, oh, you're Jewish. Great. What's this week's Parsha? What time is Sabbath this week? Started going through all that stuff, and they had no idea what I was talking about. Now, not every Jew is observant, but they're going to, you know, normally they would say, my father survived the Holocaust, or, you know, you'd get something like that. When you see the people out there marching in the streets, do you feel like these people don't represent me? What are they doing? They're only making things worse. What's your feeling on
that? Yeah, of course they're making things worse. We're seeing what people are doing here in the United States. And I feel like either they don't know anything going on in the Middle East, or they're choosing to not know anything. And if they use Islam or Jewish religion, they don't know anything about it. They use whatever acts they're doing in the name of the religion. And they, I feel, they don't care about the people in the Middle East. We live in the Middle East. We've been to Israel. We met Palestinians and we went to Palestinian territories. Did they go? Did they see? Did they meet real people living in the Middle East? I don't think so. They're just ignorant, seeing what's going on in social media, and they think that they know everything, unfortunately, and they make things worse for everyone in the U.S. and back home.
Now I really want to have all you guys over to my house. Barbecue, so we'll figure it. It's all kosher, which means it's all halal. So yeah, we're good to go.
Done.
Okay,
in.
Fantastic.
Throw in the bourbon and we're there.
Oh, I got way better than that. Okay, I got you covered, my friend. No problem. Dan Pfefferman, Dr. Ahmed Kuzai, Fatima Al-Harbi, Yusef Al-Azari, and Naveen Elias. Thank you so much for being with me today. Really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and we're looking forward to enjoying Seattle the next couple of days.
Awesome. So glad you guys are here. It puts a big smile on my face in what has been a very dark time, because I look around a room like this, and I go, if we're having this conversation, and we could talk about Batman, or we could talk about bourbon, or we could talk about any of this kind of
and
stuff.
Formula One.
And Formula One racing. See, I didn't even think of that first. You could tell I'm not the fan, but Zach's the fan.
Don't bring in Real Madrid, then you're going to have a problem.
But then, really, there's not much standing in the way of actually working this stuff out. And I'm fortunate enough that I saw pieces of peace in my time. After Oslo, I was a kid during Oslo, and I looked at that and went, this isn't going to work. I looked at the Abraham Accords, and I was over the moon. And I was trying to explain to my kids the difference between one and the other. And I said, this actually has a chance. And now, sitting in the room, I just want to thank all of you for confirming to me, just by talking to all of you, that yes, peace has a chance. Thank you so much for being here. We got a whole lot more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to The Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI.